Hello and welcome to The Business End.
I'm Annie Myers.
And I'm Nelson Harvey. We're here in the back of Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn, with the greenhouse overhead.
And once again, focused on the infrastructure of the food system in New York City. The trucks and the trains and the people working all night and the people that get up in the morning.
So, what's a place that most of New York's meat and vegetables goes, but few New Yorkers ever see? The answer and the subject of our show today is the Hunts Point Market in the Bronx, one of the largest food distribution centers in the entire world. This is a 329-acre complex, and it's in the southeast Bronx, right along the Bronx River.
And it is not actually a single market. It's really four separate markets all in the same home, which are massive each in their own right. The four are the Hunts Point Terminal Produce Market, which opened in 1967, the Hunts Point Cooperative Meat Market, which has been around since 1974, and in 2008, those two were joined by the Fulton Fish Market, the oldest fish market in the entire United States, which moved from its former location at the Seaport in Manhattan. That was in 2008. And just this past September, another market has rounded out that group that is the New York City's first wholesale green market.
And we're going to talk about that wholesale green market in the first half of the show today. And in the second half, we'll talk to the head of the USDA's Fruit and Vegetable News. And that's an agency that basically gathers information on the price, the quantity, the market conditions associated with every single fruit and vegetable sold at wholesale markets across the entire United States. And this information actually has a lot to do with the price that you wind up paying at the grocery store. So before we get into our guests today, let's talk a little bit about Hunts Point, the place, and the part of the Bronx where it's located. The first thing to emphasize about this market is that it is a truly vast place. A couple of examples. There are 70,000 square feet of refrigerated space in the meat market. In the produce market, each year, approximately 2.7 billion tons of produce are sold, go through that market each year. And this represents over 60% of the produce that New Yorkers consume every single year. Hunts Point itself, in the South Bronx, there's a pretty ideal place for a huge distribution center like this. You get fairly easy access to the tri-state area, the 22 million people that live within 50 miles of the market. There's a rail yard right nearby, so trains are literally coming in, dropping food right near the market. And, of course, the real estate is much, much cheaper than Manhattan, where some of these markets were located back in the 1800s, early 1900s. But Hunts Point, of course, as with anything in New York, was not always what it is today. Between 1850 and 1900, Hunts Point was a popular home and vacation spot for a lot of the rich and famous people in New York. It was once actually owned by H.D. Tiffany, who was a member of the famous Tiffany Jewelry Empire. And going forward, after World War I, there was a commuter rail line built there. Things started to change. It slowly started to become kind of a melting pot, a more diverse neighborhood for a lot of the city's minorities coming in at that time.
And then during the 1970s, kind of around when the first markets were being established, the neighborhood was sort of hit by redlining and city planning, and there was a lot of abandonment and neglect, and so much of the area was then blacktopped, and it became this sort of industrial park that it is today. And the population is still sort of affected by this past history of the last 30, 40 years. There's, you know, now there's 11,000 residents in Hunts Point itself, which is in this, you know, it's a 1 square mile area of the South Bronx. The community is largely Hispanic. And while the markets being established there contributed a lot to the economic development and to a very strong local economy in the area, the trucks and traffic of the Hunts Point markets are also a cause of a high level of pollution in the neighborhood, and also kind of create a disparity between this kind of intense large amount of produce in the area and also a very low access to fresh produce for the actual residents of Hunts Point. According to a report published by the organization Sustainable South Bronx, the South Bronx and Hunts Point, as part of that, is an area with one of the highest levels of poverty and unemployment in the city. There's low community health and noxious uses and commercial traffic, substance abuse. And in addition to all of this, there's 40% of Manhattan's commercial waste is processed in Hunts Point, right next door to the produce meat and other markets. So several organizations like Sustainable South Bronx, Bronx River Alliance, the Bronx Council for Environmental Quality are working with the community to address these policy and planning issues. But while that goes on, the markets that are being set up there will affect the community greatly. And the development of this new wholesale green market is certainly going to be an issue for the community as it moves forward. After the break, we'll be back to talk with Bob Lewis, the founder of Green Market, and he'll tell us a little bit about this new development of the wholesale green market in the Bronx.
Little young lover, why don't you like me? Can't you see, honey, you're gonna drive me out of my mind? I can't sleep at night for thinking about you. You're looking so nice and you're about to drive me crazy when we're in school. You're sitting next to me. I'm acting a fool just to get your attention. Can't you see? Little young lover.
You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Today's program was brought to you by TechServe. www.techserve.com.
And we are back. It's the business end. And just a reminder to listeners, you can catch this and many other shows at heritageradionetwork.com or as a podcast on iTunes.
And now we're going to speak to Mr. Bob Lewis, who is the Special Assistant for Market Development at the New York State Department of Agriculture. He is an urban planner by training and is perhaps most well known as the co-founder of Green Market in 1976, which has grown from one market in Union Square to a current network of nearly 50 markets throughout the five boroughs. Green Market is now run by the city's Council on the Environment of New York, or CENYC. So just this past September, Bob supported the State Department of Agriculture in awarding a grant to CENYC to manage the new wholesale green market at Hunts Point. It's the first ever wholesale green market in New York. And Bob, are you there to talk to us about that?
I am, Annie. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm great.
So we first just wanted to get a sense of what sets this particular market apart from the other markets in Hunts Point, sort of why it's important and what it is.
Well, sure. Everybody knows Green Market has been involved for 30 years, in fact, over 30 years, in reestablishing the connection between the small farmer and people in the city. And most people are familiar with markets that they can shop at during the day, early to maybe evening when the farmers are still there. This is a kind of market that provides other buyers with access to local produce and other foods, those other buyers being stores, restaurants, institutions that want to buy collectively, like a food co-op, or, of course, a school or daycare center. So this is really establishing the local connection, but on the next level above the consumer, the one that allows the rest of the food system to have access specifically to a place where farmers will sell to them directly and not only to individuals. And, of course, this is operating at nighttime, not during the day, because that's while most of us are asleep. The city's food distribution system is busy receiving and distributing products when the streets are much less congested. It involves wholesale quantities, that is, by the case, not by the pound, not by the piece, but on a box basis or a carton basis or a bushel basis. that's what's going on.
And these farmers that are now selling at the wholesale green market were formerly kind of selling these wholesale quantities at the Bronx Terminal Market, or what was their venue before for selling wholesale quantities?
Well, it's really an interesting thing. Historically, the city, of course, if you go far enough back, you'll find the original farmers markets in the Dutch city of New Amsterdam, and then later on in the English city. And there's a whole fascinating history of markets and market geography that some scholars have focused on. And of course, in that period, the growth of the city occurred, and naturally, as the continental distribution networks developed, the city started to look for products from elsewhere. So you began to see the need for wholesale markets. And over those years, wholesale markets were established in the city. There was one in the Bronx Terminal Market. There was one in Harlem early on. There was one in Brooklyn near the Navy Yard. This is part of New York history that's under the, in a sense, underground, almost archaeology. But the Bronx Terminal Market, until the mid-70s, still had a section that farmers could use called, essentially, the farmers' section. So what's happening now is actually not new. It's hardly surprising that it's not new. It's something that happened years ago. There was similarly a market like that in Brooklyn, a Brooklyn wholesale farmers market that eventually disappeared as part of the old Canarsie, or the relocation of the Brooklyn market at the Navy Yard to Canarsie. So what was left in the 70s was one location where the farmers would come, middle-scale farmers selling by the case, mostly at night, but sometimes during the day. And the farmers there had to move because that whole facility eventually was demolished. And that only happened really in the last few years where the city chose to see a mall develop where once was a market, in a sense a dilapidated market that for various reasons was neglected. But still provided important access for small-scale buyers, bodegas, and especially ethnic minorities who use that market to access foods from wholesalers. So there's, you know, separate issues here. The future of that market is not what we're talking about, or that type of market, but rather the section of it that the farmers had inhabited. We simply did not want to see those farmers lose what connections they had. It was critical that in this day and age, when demand for local has grown so much, and especially among buyers like stores and institutions and restaurants, that we have a facility that provides them with this access. And that's why we made an effort to relocate the what was left of the wholesale farmers market at Bronx Terminal over to a place which was part of the city's food distribution facility at Hunts Point, but is, in a sense, sitting complementary to another market over there, the wholesale fish market. So what's happening now is essentially that the Council on the Environment has, as a result of a grant that they applied for competitively, been awarded a grant to manage something a little bit different for them than what they've been doing for the last 33 years, which is to manage a wholesale facility that, of course, is focused on farmers, but requires an outreach effort to reconnect people at the wholesale level to the sources that are, in fact, local and waiting to be developed further to supply them with the products that they need and that they want.
And, Bob, this is Nelson Harvey. As Annie mentioned in her intro, you were involved, of course, in the 70s in starting the institution, Green Market, first there in Union Square.
As a regional planner, yeah.
Sure. And that's an institution that both Annie and I either work at or work for or associated with in some regard. So thanks for that. But I wanted to ask, you know, having been through that battle to sort of get, you know, something like that established in the city through city bureaucracy, and then having sort of done it again, in a sense, here, what were some of the obstacles that you came across in getting this wholesale market through, and what do you attribute those obstacles to? Where do you think that they are coming from?
Well, I think that, you know, in the city, economic development is going through a change now. The concept of what economic development is Those of us who've seen the importance of an urban-rural connection began as really a few. And as you well know, there's many more people aware and interested in the whole subject of sustainability, of healthy, fresh local food than there ever were before. And, you know, that consciousness is also relatively new in city government. We made a case at the United Nations this spring about the importance of urban-rural linkages, and that was because we know that municipal governments, while they're concerned with municipal issues that could include water supply and other infrastructure, energy, solid waste, and so on, for many of them, the subject of food supply is strictly a matter of the private sector. For whatever reason, systems that once were in place, physical infrastructure, that of course is quite important, just as the water supply system is, physical infrastructure for food that was public, has in many cases been replaced by a completely privatized system. The problem with that is simply that the local grower, who may be small, is not easily able to access systems that are set up for large-scale food distribution, such as supermarket warehouses and so forth. Obviously, we need those. That's an essential component of the food supply these days. We all depend on it. On the other hand, in order to reestablish connections with the local agriculture, one has to introduce the concept of the importance of local into the thinking about sustainability. So I think some of the effort that, you know, that the time involved here has been the education of our colleagues in city agencies, and you can think of any of them, the health department, which really gets it, the city's economic development corporation, which definitely now gets it, and others who simply didn't have food pretty much on their radar screen until relatively recently. And I think now it's clear, and certainly the success of the green markets has shown the popularity of healthy, fresh food that's just been harvested that retains its flavor. And clearly that means its nutritional content as well is more palatable to everyone, including kids who might not otherwise like vegetables, once they get to experience it and learn about it. So I think the educational process is part of it. Look, when you're dealing with major infrastructure, it's going to take time. And this is relatively new field. Adding the concept of food to city planning is new. It's new everywhere, and you're only a few schools in the U.S. that are really teaching this as part of planning, but the Planning Association has now embraced food as a legitimate element. So I think we'll see more and more city officials and elected officials as well who see the importance of this coming on board. Naturally, this is a state, not just a city, so that the state government officials who understand the importance of a linkage economically with a region and environmentally, they get it. But it still takes time to overcome this urban-rural gap. It's really something that is almost, a fundamental cultural challenge, just as cities have often thought of themselves as somehow superior to urban or rural areas and divorced from, nature and its constraints. That is one of the factors here. So I think we're on the right track, and people in the city as well as upstate get it. So I think we're going to see a lot of progress.
Yeah, and to kind of get into the nitty gritty of this market, I was curious about the, I think of the retail green markets as having a lot of rules, justified rules about
right.
Who can sell there and exactly, how, exactly who can be involved.
Mm-hmm.
So I was wondering what the rules are associated with this market, and particularly since Green Market is managing it, if the
right.
rules will be similar.
Right. Good question. Well, Green Market is evolving a new set of rules for this market. I don't believe they'll be all that different from the rules that guide the green markets. There are some important differences here, and that is that at the wholesale level, it's helpful for smaller growers to collaborate. And it's also true that you won't find cooperatives selling at Green Market because, in a sense, they would have potentially a full line of items, whereas Green Market has made a point of having the individual producer, the actual producer, involved with the products that they themselves grow. But on the wholesale level, it's legitimate if we're trying to source a city like New York with 8 to 9 million people with multiple products from upstate, and we have the logistical challenges of distribution, it's silly for an individual farmer who has one item not to collaborate with a neighbor who has another item. So the more we can aggregate and retain the farmer identity at a wholesale facility, I think the better, and I think Green Market recognizes that. So that'll be one of the things, I'm sure, that cooperatives will be welcome and that associations of growers will be welcome. But there will still be a respect for the grower and not the middleman here. I mean, this is not a market for third parties. This is a market for growers.
Right. And, Bob, we talked earlier about the South Bronx as a neighborhood and the fact that, you know, in that neighborhood there's not a whole lot of access to fresh food right now. And in reading the press release associated with the opening of the wholesale market and reading the press coverage of that, there was a lot made of the fact that this could be a venue for residents of that neighborhood to have access to fresh produce. And I'm sort of wondering how that'll work, given the fact that the hours of this are so odd. I mean, it's like, as you mentioned, you know, this is happening when most of us are sleeping. And, you know, the place is open until about noon on Saturday, which gives folks a chance to get in there. But I'm wondering sort of how are people going to, of the neighborhood, you know, going to get in there? Are there plans to sort of expand it?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, historically, the old Bronx Terminal Farmers Market was open to anyone. And just as this is, there is no gate fee on this at all. That was negotiated, and that's very important, so that no one needs to pay anything to come into a market which has a secure environment, which is the way wholesale markets work. There are usually gates, there's security. It's important to the wholesalers and others that there be that. So, but there is no fee. So just like in the old Bronx Terminal Market, people can shop and buy by the case. And that is, I want to just say, that the goal here is to establish something important that's new, which means affordability. When one buys, let's say, as an individual or as a family or as a group of families or as a co-op, one is buying by the case at a very affordable price. I mean, it's there's no question. It's a great savings to be able to buy directly. This is also true for a bodega and for someone else who is dealing with a population with limited means. So the whole idea of having a direct marketing outlet for the middle-scale grower is very important, both on quality level and on price level. Essentially, the grower has internalized the marketing process here, just like they do in a retail market, so they can afford to give people a break, so to speak, in price and be able to move their product entirely. I mean, that being said, you know, it is still an issue of buying by a case. I mean, an individual may not be able or should not buy by a case because you don't want to see that item spoil. So, you know, there's a great opportunity for people to work together here and split up you know, a volume and come back with some fantastically fresh items that are very affordable, including a lot of ethnic items that growers have been growing there because over at Bronx Terminal they had evolved a good relationship with Bronx consumers and small stores and restaurants and so on. So they're growing a lot of cilantro, you know, they're growing calabaza and other items that people want, specialty eggplants and so on and so forth. So, you know, that's very good. There is really no substitute for having retail markets around the city. That's why we've been committed to see the expansion of retail farmers markets. And it's not only 50, it's really 100, because Green Market does do 50, and there are independent nonprofit local organizations that are sponsoring the other 50. So in terms of access, there are already retail markets that serve the area in Mott Haven and Hunts Point during the day, during the weekdays, during the local growing season. There is also the possibility that, and it's more than a possibility, the Green Market sponsor another kind of project called the Youth Market Project. Not sure you're familiar with it, but it's a very exciting one. There are 10 youth markets around the city now, And what that is essentially a farmer's market run by a group of very motivated, well-trained young people after school or on weekends who essentially are performing all the functions that a farmer does. Well, what happens there is that products from the wholesale farmer's market are delivered to that retail location so that they could be marketed during hours that are convenient to people. And I think one of the things that are being discussed is the possibility of establishing a youth market in the Hunts Point neighborhood directly that would be sourced from the wholesale farmer's market so that when the farmers leave for the day, maybe that's around 8 to 9 a.m., a delivery from that market would have been made to a youth group that would then basically staff the market for the rest of the day. And, of course, that's a win-win in many levels. To involve young people in this is to create jobs, to create career tracks, to create a sense of peer-to-peer education, which is, we've seen, very effective in getting kids to see, hey, you know, let's eat healthy, you know, let's...
Yeah, no, it sounds like something we should definitely cover in future shows.
Yep, I would say so. I think if you interview some of the kids, you'll see all the enthusiasm for that.
All right. Well, thanks, Bob, for joining us. We're going to keep moving here, but yeah, thanks for talking to us.
Any old time. Feel free to call back again and give you an update anytime you like.
We will. Thanks a lot.
After a break... The agency responsible for tracking the prices of all the fruits and vegetables sold in the country.
Listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Today's program was brought to you by TechServe. www.techserve.com.
Welcome back to The Business End. You can come listen to this show online at archives@heritageradionetwork.com.
So, I took a couple of economics courses in college, as I imagine many of you did. And one of the things that I remember about these classes was that the professors often would spend a lot of time telling us about the fact that these models we were learning, that they were teaching us, were actually not very realistic models. And that's because in the real world, of course, there are these things called market failures, is what they called them, where basically real world circumstances get in the way of these models and kind of muddy things up. And one of the failures that my economics teacher would always talk about was something called imperfect information. And basically this is the idea that if a seller doesn't know what their competitors, the other sellers, are charging for a product, and if buyers don't know what different sellers are charging for a product, people are not going to be able to get the best deal that they can, be as competitive as they'd like to be. Basically, the free market system will fail.
Of course, in a country like the U.S., where millions of tons of food move around the country every day, being sold at thousands of markets in every state in the U.S., the problem seems pretty impossible to surmount. But today, we're going to talk to a guy whose agency tries to solve that problem by providing up-to-date information on the price, quantity, and market conditions associated with every fruit and vegetable sold at every large wholesale market in the entire country.
Now, because of the work of this agency, I can go online today and find out that mixed nuts, which are sold by the 50-pound sack, of course, cost between $1.76 and $1.80 a pound yesterday at the Hunts Point Market in New York. And, you know, if I'm a mixed nut salesman, that's important information. So I'd like to introduce Terry Long. He's the chief of the Market News Branch for Fruit and Vegetable Programs at the USDA in D.C. Mr. Long, welcome to the Heritage Radio Network.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate the opportunity to be with you.
Absolutely. Appreciate you being here.
Hey, Terry, this is Annie Myers. I just wanted to ask first about, you know, your staff that's going around to wholesale markets, farmers markets, and other distribution venues to interview the suppliers and determine, you know, all the information that you compile. It seems like a huge job, and I wanted to ask sort of how many people it takes to gather that information and really the process of aggregating everything that they compile into the national reports and charts that you find online.
Well, we work with several of the partner states in the United States, but there are largely federal market reporters. There's about 50 federal reporters and 5 to 7 state reporters covering 15 wholesale markets around the United States, as well as most of the major shipping point markets, which would be California, Florida, Texas, as well as the import markets, like along the Mexican border, products crossing from Canada, then the large volume of winter fruit from places like Chile, Australia, and New Zealand. So we're tracking not only those 15 wholesale markets, but most of the major shipping point markets as well.
And this might sound a little bit naive, but basically, what is the purpose of all this data? In other words, why do buyers and sellers of these products find that these reports on price, supply, market conditions are useful to them?
Well, that's a good question. This program, the Federal State Market News Service, began in 1915. When the market was a lot different, the way products was marketed, producers in distant points would ship their products into the population center, such as New York, and the merchants there, called commission agents, would sell the product for them and then keep a percentage for their handling and send the rest back. Well, these producers and shippers had no way of knowing, A, if they'd chosen the correct market to ship their product, and secondly, that they'd been treated fairly. So industry leaders actually reached out to the department, asked them to create a neutral third party to create a level of transparency, market transparency, so that in fact they would have that reliable metric that would tell them not only what was going on around the country, but also to ensure that they were being given a fair return on their product.
Now, aside from the price of each product, what are some of the other questions that a representative asks sellers when they interview them?
Well, again, we're interviewing primarily sellers, but also cross-checking with buyers. So we need great detail, because a tomato is not just a tomato, and there's many varieties of apples, so we need very detailed information so that you as a shipper or a trader can find exactly what you were looking for. So we're looking for point of origin, type of pack, grade, conditions, size. All of these influence the value of the product in the market. But we're also looking at things like what is your customer demand? How was the movement today? How much product do you have left? What's coming in tomorrow? So we can paint a complete picture of the market.
And for something like customer demand, are there actual sort of hard metrics for that? Or is it kind of a more, just a kind of a feel that they have, a kind of a general sense that they,
right,
they have?
Well, it's more of the art side of market reporting, because we're using qualitative terms like demand exceeds supply, demand light, demand moderate. In other words, it's a sense of what is available in this market, whether it's New York City or at the border with Mexico. What does that supply look like, and how fast is it clearing the floor or being loaded on trucks to leave? So it's a little bit more of the art aspect as compared to the total volume crossing the border from Mexico. Now, that's obviously very quantitative. So that demand factor is more the role of a trained market reporter to aggregate up all the feedback he's given from buyers and sellers and then make that determination.
And lastly, something that I noticed when I went to the website of the terminal market and clicked on these reports, you can download, you know, nut report or reports for different vegetables. And I did that. And I noticed that on it, there was, in addition to the price data, in addition to the information about how things are being sold and all the hard numbers, there's mention of the weather at the time. I assume this was at the market at the time that the report was filed. And I'm wondering why that's on there. Why does that matter to buyers and sellers?
Well, you've mentioned that we cover nuts, and obviously we're covering fresh fruits and vegetables, but we cover some other products like honey and cut flowers. But all of these products are directly, and I would say immediately, impacted by the weather. For example, you know, the weather's turned hot. It's pushing the product to ripen and mature more quickly. So I can foresee that there's going to be an increase in supply on the market, or, of course, the reverse. Conditions are very cool, unseasonably so. It's going to slow down production. Or I would say a cataclysmic event, such as a major frost or major freeze, which is going to have a immediate impact at shipping point, at wholesale, and then downstream at the retail level.
So these are things that are actually going to affect basically the flow. The weather is going to affect the flow of sales right there at the market.
Absolutely.
Sure. Well, Terry Long, chief of the Market News Branch for the Fruit and Vegetable Programs at the USDA, I want to thank you very much for talking with us today.
Again, thank you for the opportunity, and we work for you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
You've been listening to The Business End with Annie Myers and Nelson Harvey, and I'm sure we'll be coming back to the subject of today's show, the Hunts Point Markets.
Indeed, there is much to explore. There's the meat market, there's the fish market, and we will take you there in future shows. Thanks to Lorenzo Ragionieri and Nat Wiener, the producer and engineer at Heritage. This is The Business End.